Welcome in to the Let It Fly podcast here on Jays 24/7. Ravi Lula and Taylor Stormberg here with you. Taylor, how you doing, bud?
I'm great, Ravi. I think I was telling you off air. I was able to catch the Jays' ascent to the Big East Championship while on the beach in Mexico last week. So it was doesn't get much better than that.
There's worse places to watch it for sure. Okay, so I have two questions for you right off the bat here. Number one, I know some people call you Storm or Stormy. Is there like an exclusive group of people that can call you that? Are there rules here? Because it feels a little weird to call you Taylor for some reason. I don't know why.
Both are acceptable.
Okay.
Right? It's kind of like tomato, tomato.
Sure.
I don't know who ever says tomato, but...
Never heard it in my life. Not once.
But if you want to, it's totally fine. T-Storm, also acceptable.
T-Storm. Okay. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. What's
Taylor just sounds so formal, so I wasn't sure, you know, it sounds like I'm calling on you in class, and that's weird.
So I got this weird thing where I actually completely agree with that. So everybody, right, your namesake is your namesake, right? Like, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I don't mind my name, but if you know me, then you call me something different.
Yeah, like, I think a lot of people are like that.
Right? It's like Taylor just seems like, oh, we're acquaintances and we're like, we don't really know each other. It's a formal like, hey, it's a handshake. Let's get our ties straight and we're doing a business deal.
Some reason, my instinct was to call you like Tay or Tay-Tay, but I was like, that's a little bit too close to like the T-Swizzle, I think.
T-Swizzle, I got to nick my buddy Patrick Parnin, P twice, he calls me T-Swizzle, so it works
so too. We're in the neighborhood. We're in the neighborhood.
You can mix and match. But now I got to flip that back over to you, Ravi, and I got to know what's 1-2, like 1A, 1B?
Most people just call me Ravi because there's not like a natural nickname for it.
Like Ra? So,
yeah,
or,
no.
Or V?
There is one person that calls me V.
Okay.
Since I was like in middle school, we've known each other forever, and she calls me V. What usually happens is Lou. Like when I was coaching, it was Coach Lou.
I like that.
So
yeah,
that's a lot of people do Lou. You know, it's kind of funny. So the only other real nickname I've had was Bob, and that's that's because the first time. So this goes back to my freshman year, like very first, like opening days of practice for basketball, right, in college. And my coach thought my name was Robbie instead of Ravi. And so he would go Robbie, and then that turned into Robert, and then Roberto, and then I had this, I was like the best scout team player of all time. Like I would just hit daggers. Like that's just what I did. Like, I had no fear. I would always take whatever, the biggest shot I could. And so it went from that, from Roberto and Rob or whatever, to Big Shot Bob.
Big Shot Bob. Exactly.
And then just Bob. So it's either been Bob or Coach Lou for most of my adult life.
I like that. And I do want to touch on this real quick because as a former scout team All-American,
it's so fun.
It's a pleasure to share the podcast with you, to share the mic.
Dude, it's so fun to just like throw daggers at first team because they get so mad.
I think either in my mind or on the actual scoreboard, I was undefeated on the scout team because you just murder dudes, just absolutely murder dudes.
I used to have the starters or the rotation guys they would just shout at me. They would just yell at me because they would get so frustrated. Mm-hmm. And like, listen, I wasn't a good basketball player, but I was good enough to bother you. And I was a good shooter. That's all I could do. So if I got a little bit of daylight, like I felt pretty good about it.
It's going up.
Yeah, it's going up. And like, I like my chances that it's going in. And so, especially at the level I was playing at, like obviously that it didn't translate because I'm 5'9", right? But I think at the level we were playing at, I was a good shooter. And if I got some daylight, you had a problem. Now, the good thing for you is I couldn't dribble, not a good ball handler. So it was difficult to get that daylight. I had to work really hard. But I like if that. I got it, it was going up.
Yeah. Well, there was a time at Creighton, I want to say, guys, maybe it was sophomore or junior year. And it was, it had to be sophomore year because it was myself, Grant Gibbs, okay. Ethan Rogge, and Ross Farini, and Greg Echenique. That was our scout team.
Dude, that team could have won the Valley.
Team could have won the Valley. Yeah. Let's just say the starters didn't win anything.
Oh, I can't imagine. I mean, let's go.
Yeah. And we had Matt Dorwart was a part of that squad too. I mean, it was like
Dorwart's a sneaky baller.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. He's got the length, the silky smooth jumper. I mean, but to have we eventually had three starters, right? Grant and Ethan all on the scout team for various reasons, but it was just like, yeah, it was almost too easy. It's like, these guys should ultimately be playing, but they can't right now. So we're just going to destroy you. But no, it was fun.
Okay. And then my second question, after the nicknames. Okay. So you were in Mexico for the Big East tournament.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How would you have felt? Because I assume if you had been available, you would have gone to New York, right?
I would have. Yes.
How would you have felt if they won the Big East tournament without you?
Oh boy. I will say this quietly because my wife is on the couch in the other room, but it was our honeymoon. So yes, it does. And we had a very enjoyable time doing a whole lot of nothing. She did, however, make me come back on Saturday during the game.
That's a tough sell.
Thursday, we went to the bar right outside the beach. Jays win. Same spot, same TV, same dinner order, same drink order, the whole thing. Friday, we go back to the same spot. Same drink, same dinner, same everything. So what do you think should happen on Saturday?
I think you have to delay your flight. You gotta change that flight, man.
Oh, so we weren't able to do that. We had to fly back and come back to the States. But you ultimately see what happened. I feel like Mac is a very superstitious guy. I also am superstitious. And I'm not going to say it was my fault, but I'm not going to say it wasn't my wife's fault.
I would say it might be a little bit be your wife's fault. A little bit. Just like a little bit. I get it. I like to pull the Michael Scott. I'm not superstitious, but I'm a little stitious. I'll do some of the same routines and things like that. But yeah, that's if I think in that situation, you got to change the flight to Sunday. I think that's what's got to happen there.
Well, and the tough part, Robbie, was that we had the room for Sunday.
Oh, you had another day already?
We had another day.
Oh, but no.
Flight was already scheduled for Saturday. It got delayed. It was a whole thing.
Oh, man.
It could have happened. But then I would have been feeling so pissed that I was in Mexico and not calling in New York. And Madison Square Garden. So, again, a week on the beach with my lovely wife, who is probably not going to be my wife much longer. I keep talking about this. So,
just blame it on me.
We should change topics. Do you have a question number three that maybe would?
I actually do, and it's about a current event. We're recording this during the first four right now, and the first year head coach Steve Lutz and the Texas A&M Corpus Christi Islanders are facing off against Texas Southern here. So Lutz was there when you were there.
He was, yeah.
And he didn't leave until after you were gone, right?
Yep, that is correct.
So you had him the whole time. And I guess just from kind of being around him and stuff, are you at all surprised by the ability? Because this was A&M Corpus Christi was bad last year, like single-digit win bad. and he brings in, I think, 10 transfers, and boom, they're in the NCAA tournament year one. I mean, I think anybody who's been around Coach Lutz is not surprised he's being successful, but that quick of a turnaround is kind of surprising for anybody, right?
It is. It's definitely, it's surprising because of how fast it happened. It's not surprising because of the type of coach he has become.
Sure.
And I can elaborate a little bit there. Like, in that second year of being in the program, right, got recruited by Dana, played for Dana for a year, Matt comes in, full new staff, and Coach Lutz is certainly a big part of that and a huge reason we were successful in the Valley and in Big East. But he came in solely as the Texas pipeline guy.
Yep.
I mean, he was the Texas recruiter at the time, and he started bringing really talented guys into our program from the South, and he did a great job at that. And along the way, he started picking up on the X's and O's, right?
Sure.
Kind of that Mac genius that we talk about, learning from the other coaches, because at the beginning, he would be on the road while we were playing games, and he wouldn't even be at the game because he was out recruiting. And so, and that slowly changed as Mac started to grow into his head coaching role and gave his assistants a lot more work to do on the actual game plan. And so I think you saw that there. And then that gave him a great runway to go to Purdue and do that with Matt Painter, because as you've seen,
that's a great program
coaches,
at Purdue,
100%. And so, I don't want to say it's the perfect storm, but to have Mac and Painter at the same, and back to back assistant coaching roles, to have both of those guys, you can't find a better
great
duo.
People. They're great people to learn under, right? It's like
great.
It's like Steve Kerr, right? He played under Phil Jackson, who some people consider I think everyone considers him one of the best NBA coaches of all time.
Absolutely.
And then he played under Greg Popovich, who, if it's not Phil Jackson, it's probably Greg Popovich, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, his pedigree, pretty good, you know?
Exactly.
And so no surprise to anybody that Steve Kerr comes out. Like, yes, he's got a great team. That's helpful, right?
Yeah.
But no surprise to anybody after learning under people like that, that he came out and was successful. Obviously, this is a different, scenario with Coach Mack and Matt Painter, but those are good guys to learn under, especially from like X's and O's and program building and things like that. And I'm sure you have a better feel for this than I do, but I do have one Coach Lutz story that I just want to share because and this is a nice story. This is a nice story about Coach Lutz.
There wasn't many stories that we could share at the beginning.
Despite the fact that he's a little prickly, he's like a really good dude.
Robbie, his biggest dream when he first got to Creighton was to be a head coach at a Catholic or Jesuit university. That was his ultimate goal, and that guides him as a person, right? You might not see that on the surface.
He's got a little gruff exterior.
100%. 100%. He can be an asshole as a coach. There's no doubt about that. And I'll share a story after you share. But he, first and foremost, is a great person. And I think that's why he can get guys to play for him.
Well, and almost every coach is like that, right? Every coach has that side of them where they will get after you a little bit.
You have to, yeah.
Yeah, you have to. If you're just nice all the time, you're probably not going to get anything done.
No.
And that's coming as someone who when I was a coach, I was not really a yeller. That wasn't really my, but there's still, you don't even have to be a yeller to get after somebody necessarily, but there's still a time and a place where even me, who that really was not my style, there, you get to a point where the barking starts, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just how it is. And I was a pretty bit laid back guy. I was a pretty laid back coach. But my one Coach Lutz story, and I don't know him that well, but he's always been super friendly to me, always been really nice when he would do radio interviews with us and stuff, and always was super accommodating, spent more time with us than almost any other assistant coach, probably more than any other assistant coach. When we would do post games over at DJ's, he'd actually stay and hang out for a little bit. Yeah. Like, terrific dude. And when he was leaving, Creighton to go to Purdue, I DM'd him on Twitter, just said, "Hey man, congrats. That's a great job for you. Like, I wish you all the best. We'll miss you around here." And he shoots me back and says, "Hey man, here's my cell phone number. If you need anything, let me know." And like, again, we're friendly, but we don't know each other super well. Right. And so like a week later, cause I was coaching NAI type level ball at the time, I was applying for a job, and I didn't end up getting the job. That's not an important part of the story. I was like, this is like a week after he says this to me. I text him. I go, "Hey man, can I put you down as a reference?" Mm-hmm. And this man has never seen me coach basketball. He's talked to me, so he has an idea that, you know, I'm not a total moron when it comes to the game. But like, you know, and he says, "Yeah, 100%, man. Absolutely. I would absolutely vouch for you." And I was just like, that's a really cool move for a guy like that, to not just give out the phone number, but like actually respond and come through for something like that. Like, I was just blown away, because he doesn't have to do that. He could have very easily just replied to he could have ignored my DM. I expected him to. Mm-hmm. He very easily could have just ignored the DM, or just said like, "Hey man, appreciate it. Always good. Been good talking to you," whatever, and have that be the end of it. But it's just that extra step, right? That extra relationship building that he does, that's always stuck with me. This is, going on 8 years ago now, probably maybe 7 years ago, whenever he left. I don't remember the year he left, but I was just blown away by that. And I was like, man, that's a really classy move.
100%. And I think you've seen his maturity as a coach grow over the years as well, right? At first, again, he was just that recruiter type. He came in and he kind of laid the smack down. Honestly, when that new coaching staff came in my second year, it was brutal. I mean, like, they were trying to weed guys out, and Lutz was – he was the head honcho on that, because at the time,
he was the drill sergeant, right?
Head coach couldn't spend time with guys in the off season. And so it was all assistant coaches, and totally different set of rules now, but he was the guy in charge of saying, "Hey, do you want to be here?"
Yeah.
"And I'm going to put you through everything that I possibly can physically and mentally to make sure that, when practice starts day one in October, that we've put you through all the tests that we possibly could to see if you wanted to actually play ball for us." And that was his job, and that Mac asked him to do that. And so he kind of had that hard-nosed approach where he did not care. He just went at you. And so from there, he's only grown as a better basketball mind and as a person. And to kind of piggyback off your story, he's a guy, something super simple. He's texted me every single year since I've been a player on my birthday.
Really?
Every single year.
That's nice.
Without a doubt. I just went back through my text messages, because I texted him after they won, and I was just like, "Congrats, buddy, man. I'm so excited for you." And he responded to that, within a couple hours of them winning their conference tournament and going to the NCAA tournament. And I went back and looked at it, and it's every single year, man. He's just like, "Happy birthday, T. Hope you're doing great." And that's just, little stuff that, it goes a long way, and you see why he is being successful. And again, surprising that it's happened so quick. Talk about how, that is incredible to take a program,
huge,
new players, and get them going in the same direction, and then ultimately winning your conference championship to go to the NCAA tournament. He's, I know he's only in year one, but there's going to be a lot of programs looking around saying, "We could really use a guy like that."
Yeah. And like you said, it's no surprise that he's being successful. It's awesome that it's happened so fast. You figure it takes a couple years, but he's like, "Nope, not wasting any time. Let's get after it."
Exactly.
We'll move off of Coach Lutz here. They're in a 1-point game in the second half, so hopefully he pulls it out here. But let's move on to Creighton, and let's start with the Big East tournament. I know personally, I was concerned about the three games in 3 days with the with the legs, with the short lineup. I mean, they're really only playing six guys at this point. I was really impressed with their ability to come out, play Marquette, have that game pretty well in hand. Obviously, they just blow the doors off of Providence, and then to still have the legs to, like, yeah, the jumpers weren't falling, and that's probably a fatigue issue, right? To shoot that way is probably a fact. They just didn't have legs anymore. But their mental focus and their defensive intensity never dropped an ounce, yeah, which is incredible when you're that physically fatigued.
100%. And again, these guys are young. They shouldn't be tired, but it's a long season, Ravi. And they get to the Big East tournament and they battle against Marquette. They played well. They got the job done. You had multiple guys in double figures, right? And really, for the most part, outside of Lewis and Marcel, I mean, nobody else scored in double figures in that Marquette game for the Golden Eagles. And then you come out and just knock the socks off of Ed Cooley and the Providence Friars. And then night three, there's got to be so much juice, much excitement to go into that. And then you lay an egg offensively in the first 20 minutes. But you hold Villanova to 19 first half points. I mean, there's not many teams in the country that are going to be able to do that.
No. And that's where there's a level of maturity on this team, despite the fact that it's a lot of young guys, because in two ways, as I mentioned, I don't know that people appreciate how hard it is to stay focused when you're that tired. Like, it's really easy to let your mind wander for just a second. And that's all it takes, especially against Villanova, right? You let your mind wander for a second, Justin Moore goes backdoor. You let your mind wander for a second, Colin Gillespie pulls up for a three. Like, there's just no opportunities to take breaks mentally or physically. And when you're that tired, it's really hard to keep your mind engaged. But aside from that part, even, it's just a human nature thing. It's really hard to continue playing hard when you're not making any shots. Mm-hmm. And you've been there. I've been there. I think anybody who's played pickup ball has been there. When the shot's not falling, it is so hard to convince yourself to give a crap about anything else, right? Especially when you're a guy that is used to making shots, whether it's a Ryan Hawkins, an Alex O'Connell, any of those guys, right, that are used to making shots. When that shot's not falling, and to their credit, it's been this way all year, does not matter. They are still locked in 100% in every other facet of the game. And I don't know that people understand how uncommon that is.
Yeah. And I also will say there's a frustration aspect to that too, right? It's not just a lack of focus or unwillingness to play defense. There's a frustration that comes with not being successful on the offensive end. And they, not only are they maintaining focus and being connected and staying locked in, but they're not getting too mad.
Yeah. Either. They're not trying to do too much.
Exactly.
They're not making frustration plays. Doing stupid frustration fouls, which, especially when you're that young and you haven't been through the battles yet, it's so much harder to do when you don't have anything to pull from, right? You don't have any of those experiences to be like, okay, we've been here, we've done this before. They just have this, and 100% it's a coaching thing, it's a culture thing, but you have to give the guys credit too, because they're the ones that have to find it within themselves to be like, yep, nope, I'm going to do the hard part anyway, even though I probably don't want to right now.
Well, 100%. And I mean, you see them go, is it 0-12 or 0-13 in the first half?
Against Villanova,
Against Villanova. And I mean, your first instinct as a player is to take the ball and punt it into the top row at 100%. MSG.
Yeah.
It's the first thing you want to do. But to not do that and to continue to be patient and know that if we hang in defensively, we're going to see some shots fall in. We're going to get Calk some touches, and there's going to be some productivity on the offensive end. And eventually you saw that happen. And I mean, Robbie, that was a 2-point game with 20 seconds left. is you have a chance. If you get a stop there, 100%. You control your own destiny.
And honestly, they had so many incredible looks down the stretch, and they just didn't go.
Yeah.
Like, it was, you know, sometimes people, myself included, kind of oversimplify, and they're like, oh, it's a make-miss game. I mean, but at the end of the day, it is a make-miss game, right? Villanova knocked down a couple of huge shots. Creighton had their chances. They didn't. That's your ball game right there, right? Everything else was basically even. The intensity on both sides of the ball for both teams, everything else was basically in lockstep. Colin Gillespie made two shots. Creighton couldn't match him. That was it, right? And so, but the other thing that you have to remember also, if Creighton has Ryan Nembhard, they win that game. I mean, it's your starting point guard.
Yeah.
Like, am I crazy, or is that, I mean, it's a 2-point game with 20 seconds left. If you have your starting point guard, that's worth 2 points, right? That's the difference.
I would say so. Yes, I would definitely say so. I think, you know, we've seen this in the last few games since that St. John's game, right? There is a trade-off that you're seeing with Roddy Andronikashvili coming into the ball game, because his defensive presence, his on-ball defense of point guards, it is something that Creighton has never had.
It's harassing. I mean,
never. And so he disrupts the game in so many ways.
Yeah.
And then you look conversely at the offensive side, and he's missing point blank layups and turning the ball over. And it's just like, come on, man. Like, just do it 50% better, right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't even need your best. Like, just do it a little better. So you're seeing the trade-off there, and I think, you know, as this team continues to progress, and hopefully it's more than one game on Thursday night, you're going to see him become either more engaged on the offensive end and have to play well offensively, or Mac is going to really shrink that bench and he's going to play five guys.
I mean, it can't shrink much more, man.
I know.
I will say, first half against Marquette, I think it was against Marquette, right? Roddy keeps Creighton in that game when Trey Alexander goes out with two fouls, right?
Yeah.
And you see glimpses of his offensive game, because coming out of international ball, that's what he was known for. He was known for as this crazy creator. And I don't know what his touch around the rim is going to be like. Ultimately, that's probably my biggest concern about him offensively. But you see little flashes where he gets into the paint and he sees an angle and makes a little pass to Ryan Kalkbrenner for an easy dunk, or whips it out to Ryan Hawkins for an open three. And you see little flashes of it, right? And so I think for him, a lot of it is, A, he didn't play at all last year because of the ACL. So I think the game's still a little quick for him sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
B, that's typically a 2-year recovery to feel yourself again.
Yeah.
And C, if you've watched his international tape, what Mac is asking him to do, and Mac has admitted this isn't just me.
Yeah.
Is so much different than what he did before. And now all of a sudden they're like, we need a little bit more of that other stuff back, Roddy. And it's you can't just turn it on and off like a faucet like that, right? It's really difficult to do. So I like Roddy's game a lot. Obviously, there's the defensive stuff that I didn't even know existed until this year, which is like it's menacing to the other team. And it's a lot of fun to watch. I mean, he had a couple defensive plays that won the Marquette game in Omaha, right? Like he was just like, hey, we're done here. This is ours. And I think the offenses will get there, because that's the part of the game he's supposed to be good at anyway, right? Like, that's his thing. So I'm excited for Roddy moving forward. I don't know. I'm hoping we see flashes of that in the NCAA tournament on Thursday and hopefully beyond. But you also just have to wonder about, okay, if they have one more shot creator against Villanova, can they get more than 48 points? Probably. Like, if they've got Ryan Nembhard, they probably can get more than 48 points. Maybe they give up a little bit more, but I don't know. You also, the other part that I think people have not necessarily mentioned is the lob game to Ryan Kalkbrenner out of the pick and roll has changed quite a bit because the chemistry that was developed between Kalkbrenner and Nembhard, all of a sudden that's gone, right? Trey Alexander doesn't have that same chemistry with him. And there's, don't get me wrong, there's still been plenty of lobs to Ryan at Kalkbrenner, but I think there's a lot of missed offense there, especially when teams rush the ball handler. Those passes out either to reverse and get to Ryan Kalkbrenner or to just slip the ball through the defense to Ryan Kalkbrenner right out of that blitz, that hard hedge.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where they miss Ryan Nembhard the most. And, you know, you're going to have a hard time convincing me that's not worth 6 points in a game that they lose by six, right? Like that's, you know, so when I look at that and I see, okay, there's no starting point guard. This is a brand new team and a bunch of guys playing roles they've never played before. I just feel incredible about that performance in New York.
No, I completely agree. And you're one thing that I think people don't realize at this stage of the season is, you know, in a conference tournament game, in the championship game, Robbie, you're playing one of the best, I mean, 10 to 15 teams in the country.
Yeah, there were eight coming. Villanova was eight coming into that game, right? So,
I mean, yeah, Villanova has a legitimate chance to win a national championship.
100%.
I mean, 100%. They really do. I mean, they're a top 10 team in the country for a reason, and they find ways to win games. They have a veteran team that's played together, and they always come together at the right time. And they don't win flashy. They don't win by 25. They win close games.
Except for 2018, man. They housed people.
Boy, that's very true. That's very true. Yeah,
they housed people that year. They did. Hey, last loss of the season, though. That was us.
True.
That was us.
Very true. But and it was in a great game, and it has to give you hope for what's coming up on Thursday night. But you got to tip your hat to what Greg McDermott, the coaching staff, and what the players have been able to do by just buying in and believing in the, you know, in the 12 guys that are in the locker room, because this season doesn't happen if they don't have that level of commitment to each other.
Yeah, 100%. And honestly, that's, I don't know how deep we want to get into this, but after what happened last March with the comments and stuff, that was the thing I was worried about, was that bought-in factor and the culture and things like that. And obviously, the people that are closest to that situation and closest to Mac understand that that's not who he really is. Whatever happened there, you know, I don't know that we'll ever know the full details of what exactly led to that circumstance, but the people that are in that locker room now obviously don't worry about that with Coach Mac, and that is not a reflection of his character. And so that, for that to be the strength of this team just a year after that happened is a really impressive to me and honestly really surprising.
Yeah. No, I have to agree, right? Not only that the culture hit that could have taken.
Sure. Yeah.
Right, but the player personnel and then ultimately the changing of who's on the floor. I mean, I think that's more, yeah. Like from an X's and O's and day-to-day standpoint of what's happening this season is we lost 95% of our scoring in minutes from last season.
And that's a real number. It's actually 95%.
Actually 95. And now we don't – and Sharif hasn't played this season.
I was going to say, and like 3 of the 5% remaining was Sharif.
Yeah.
So right. We really, I mean, brought back like 2% of our production from last year.
100%. And you couldn't imagine a bigger jump from freshman to sophomore year than Ryan Kalkbrenner has had. You couldn't have drawn that up. But, I mean, for him, for Coach Mack and their staff to do what they have done this season, again, no knock to Ed Cooley and what he did this year. No knock to whoever's going to win National Coach of the Year. But he has to be in that conversation for the 2021-2022 season, because it's remarkable what he's been able to do.
Well, not just a new team on the court, but a largely new coaching staff. The only guy that was back was Huss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you replaced two assistants. they had to scratch and claw to keep Huss in Omaha. And so he's not only doing it. I mean, you're keeping that culture in place and you're building this culture, not only with a brand new team, but a largely new coaching staff also. And I know they've got like Merfeld and like Vanderloo, guys that have been around the program for a long time that aren't in necessarily assistant coaching roles anymore per se, but still to have your on-court coaches change like that as much as your on-court personnel did, that's really crazy to see the way this thing came together. And I said at the start of the year that this is not a team you're going to want to play by the end of the season, but they even blew away my expectations. I mean, and we'll talk about Providence here real quick. I thought Providence was a little fraudulent all year. I thought their record was bloated for what they actually are. They're a pretty good basketball team. Don't get me wrong. NCAA tournament team for sure. I think they're probably a lot closer to the UConn, Seton Hall, Marquette, Creighton part of the pack than they are the Villanova part of the pack. And we saw that with Villanova sweeping them this year. Mm-hmm. But that what they did to Providence, even if I do think they're a little inflated in terms of their record, I mean, that's incredible. Nobody does that to an Ed Cooley team.
No.
Like no one. I mean, that was a 30 plus point margin for a lot of the second half.
Yeah. And the only other team to do that in conference was Marquette. They were the only team. They had that Providence had that one blimp against Marquette. I want to say it was at Marquette, but they got
when Marquette was rolling.
They were 7 of 7 or 8 of 8, I think, and they played Providence and got smacked by 30. But it really was. I mean, could not believe it. You're just like your mouth is open, your jaw is on the table, and you're just like, are we really up 25 right now?
There was a part of me that just kept waiting for the run, right?
100%.
I was just like, okay, Creighton's going to have a few turnovers. They're going to have that little rut. And they did a little bit, but they never allowed it to get, I don't think, below 20 the last like 15 minutes of the game. And so that was an incredible performance. And I want to just mention real quick Arthur Kaluma, because I actually think his play at the end of the first half set up that just ass kicking the rest of the way, because that was I believe it was 28-28, mm-hmm. I think was the score. No, it was 25-25. And he scores like 15 of the last 17 points of the half and just breaks Providence. He broke them. They were they were done.
Yeah.
And we didn't know it at the time, but the game was over by that point. That was the closest they would get was the 15 points at halftime. And it was – that was – and listen, I've said Kaluma's had NBA potential since he got here. And I was like, best case scenario for him, he has a huge jump from year one to year two and maybe he leaves after a sophomore.
Yeah.
Probably more likely he leaves after year three. But that first half, the end of the last like 10 minutes against Providence in the first half, that was the first time in a long time, not just for him – but for Creighton, that I've seen a guy just single-handedly take over a game.
Yeah.
And it was pretty remarkable to watch because he did it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. No, he did. And he's so versatile when he gets in that zone, because he gets to that right hand and, I mean, he just full back carries and then he's got the explosiveness to finish at the rim. He's got that nice little shifty move, that little dream shake in the post and the step back. Right. And then he can knock down, you've seen it now, he can knock down those open in rhythm, mostly in transition or kick out in out threes. Mm-hmm. So he's got that scoring ability at all three levels. And when he puts it together, you can see why, hey, this guy probably isn't going to be here 2 or 3 years from now, because he's going to be playing for some money. And I'm excited about his potential, and he's going to have to be, going to have to be the difference, I think, athletically, to be able to match up with some of the teams Creighton could potentially see in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, so let's move on to the NCAA tournament real quick here before we wrap up. Obviously, they've got San Diego State on Thursday. I actually like this matchup for them. In years past, this would have been my worst nightmare, but this is obviously a very different Creighton team. San Diego State does not have a lot of firepower. They're going to play incredibly, we'll call it deliberate pace. They're going to play real slow, and they're not going to take a ton of shots, and they're going to play great defense and try and turn you over. And the turn you over part I don't love, because that worries me a little. But against teams like St. John's, Creighton has done really well against that, right? But the part that I think is really advantageous for them is you're going defense with Creighton. I'll take my chances this year, right? I mean, they're a top 25 defense in the league or in the country this year. I think since January 1st, they're like a top 10 defense, according to KenPom. They've been incredible defensively this year. And not just that, but the way San Diego State's lineup matches up, they've got one guy you have to stop, Matt Bradley, the transfer from Cal. He's the only guy in double digits. He's like at 17. He's double the next guy in terms of points per game. Shoots the crap out of ball, like 47% from three on the year. Great player, great shooter. But we've seen if Creighton only has to stop one guy, they're pretty good. Whether it's, you want to go back historically, whether it's Miles Powell or Marcus Howard, if you want to go this year, whether it's been Champagne, they've done really well against Colin Gillespie, even though he had a couple big shots in the championship. He didn't play great in some of those other games. Basically, any leading scorer that comes up against Creighton has one of their worst games of the year.
Yeah.
At least efficiency-wise. They might get to their number, but it's going to take them as many shots as they score. Right? They might get 18, but they're taking 19 shots to get there.
Yeah.
No, and so I actually like this matchup for them because of that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, as most NCAA tournaments games are, it's going to be a very close fought game just because of how elite the defenses are.
Yeah. And it's an 8-9 game, right? It should be close.
100%. There's a reason that these teams are seated there. I mean, you're looking at this Aztecs team who has been in the top 10 in the country defensively for the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason for that. And so I'm a little concerned about the offensive production.
Sure.
Right? That's the only piece because even against poor defensive teams, Creighton has struggled to score at times.
Sure.
Right? And so that's where you don't want to catch that bug. Right,
my tiebreaker is Kalkbrenner. I don't think they have a guy that can handle Kalkbrenner. They've got Mensa, who's like 6'10", averages like 7-7, but you know he's not seeing anybody like Kalkbrenner all year.
No,
right? They don't 100%. Have that in the. They don't have that out in the Mountain West. Yeah. Like that's not a guy that they. I mean, they don't have that. There's not very many guys in the country like Kalkbrenner, right?
No.
So I agree with you. I look at these and I'm like, yeah, there could be some like extended, you know, like Doc Sadler era Nebraska scoring droughts here.
Yeah.
But when I look at the rosters, okay, if Matt Bradley can't get it going for SDSU, they're not scoring probably.
No.
Creighton has at least a couple other options. I agree 100%. They have struggled at times, even against teams not as good defensively, but at least they have different guys they can try.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other concern that I have, Ravi, and again, I'm not being pessimistic.
Just being a little Debbie Downer over here. Come on, man.
I'm playing devil's advocate over here, okay?
So I'm the sunshine pumper. You're the devil's advocate.
the times that Ryan Hawkins has struggled, right, are usually against somebody who is somebody that outmatches him athletically.
Sure.
Right. And when he struggles to score, that we have seen it time and time again, Creighton struggles to put points on the board. That coupled with the recent struggles that Alex O'Connell has had shooting the ball, those are my concerns. Right. And again, those guys don't have to be 100%. They just have to be good enough because I think this team matches up just as well, if not better, than San Diego State defensively as one of the premier defenses in the country. So it's really just about can Creighton get one of those guys going, right? It doesn't have to, you don't have to score 30, but can Hawkins get to 18? Can can O'Connell get to 20 points in that game? Because that's, I think, ultimately that's going to be the scoring difference. And you see that. I mean, gosh, the over-under is what, 117?
Yeah, it's just down. It started at like 119 and it's plummeting. Yeah.
I mean, this might be 50-54 or 52-56. Like,
yeah, I mean, honestly, it might not be that different of a score than we saw in the championship game, right, against Villanova, like 54-48. I mean, that's
– Yeah, San Diego State had the same thing happen in their conference tournament in the MWC tournament against Boise State. I think that game was a 54-52 game against Boise, you know, ultimately Boise State ended up winning. But I mean, that, again, that first team to 60 could
maybe
ultimately,
if 55
could win this game easily just because of how good the defenses have been.
I was gonna say, you're talking about 20 burgers. I'm talking about if these guys get to double digits, you're in good shape, right? If you can get, I'm serious, man, you get AOC to 10 points, you get Ryan Hawkins to 10 points, you get Ryan Kalkbrenner to 10 points, all of a sudden, like, you're in pretty good shape there, right?
Yeah.
And so you get some of those guys in that 10 to 12 point range. And obviously, athletically, Kaluma's going to match up really well. I really like Trey Alexander's strength and patience against some of those super athletic guards that we see. Mm-hmm. His strength and kind of his body control when he gets into that mid-ranger. And it doesn't seem like athleticism bothers him there.
Yeah. His little step back jumper or turn, you know, jump stop and fadeaway jumper has been, it's been a godsend for this Creighton offense because he bails them out over and over again by just getting a piece of the paint, pivoting, jump stopping, and then just uses that length to fade away long enough from the defense. And boy, I mean, when he shoots that shot, I think it's going in every time.
Yeah, I do too. Every time he shoots it, I'm like, great shot. Love it.
Yep.
You know,
count it. Let's go play defense.
Between that and Kalkbrenner post touches, that's saved the offense to a large extent for Creighton during some of these stretches when O'Connell hasn't been shooting well and Hawkins has been locked up a little bit. But okay, so you played the, I call it Debbie Downer, you call it devil's advocate here. What are some of the things, not just against San Diego State, but just in general about this team that, okay, like let's be a little optimistic here. Maybe they make a little run. Maybe they push Kansas a little bit. What about this team do you like in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I like, you know, even without Ryan Nemhard, you still have great ball care now, right? We talked all season about turnovers. All season, I mean, I could tell you how many times we looked up at the scoreboard this year, and I mean, we were at 17, 18 turnovers in a game, and now you're seeing that number has crept down to 8, 9, 10 turnovers a game. And so I like the fact that we're taking care of the basketball. It means that we're caring about the possessions. And then defensively, I don't think it doesn't matter the matchup. I don't think many teams can score on us, right? I mean, they might be able to hit a couple threes, you know, some step back threes on some one-on-one situations, but the ball screen defense, Mac has done a great job changing that up, mixing it in, putting different defenders on guys. And then, I mean, you've got Ryan Kalkbrenner defensively, who is the defensive player of the year in the Big East.
Erases a lot of problems, right?
He does. He really does. And so you've got to have guys, you know, Alex O'Connell's got to be a guy that continues to step up defensively and guard their best player. And then Arthur is really bought in on the defensive end. And so if this team can rebound against some of these longer athletic teams like a Kansas that they would see in the second round, like Kansas is going to have a tough time scoring the basketball against our team. And so I'm excited for that potential matchup, you know, later this week if Creighton can get by San Diego State.
Yeah, and I think that's a good place to wrap it up. That's the one thing you can, I mean, listen, I like the let it fly. I mean, that's what we named the podcast, right? I like the offensive outburst and explosion as much as anybody, but the defense travels, you know, defense, you don't have to worry about, okay, if we don't make shots, we're not going to be in this game. And to Creighton's credit, they cleaned a lot of that up over the last couple of years anyway, where they had the ability to make shots and lock people up defensively. But this year, it's just, they may not make shots, but they're going to be in the game anyway, right? Yep. They're going to force themselves to be in the conversation at the end of it because of how good their defense is. And that's something you can feel good about as a Creighton fan, to just say, hey, we're going to be in it. We may not win. We may not make enough shots to win, but we'll be in it at the end because the defense is that good.
Exactly. Yeah. It, I mean, notoriously, you've seen kind of that lull offensively in the NCAA tournament, especially in that first round matchup, just because your new gym.
It happens to a lot of teams, right? Yeah, I mean, it does. Yeah.
Absolutely. You're in a new gym, new opponent. You don't necessarily know how to run your offense. It's in a little bit of a different rhythm because you've been playing against the same conference opponents for the last 3 months.
Yeah.
And now it's back to this, oh, we got to be in non-conference mode, right? No, like defense, if you've established defensive presence, then that is going to travel no matter what gym you're in, no matter which opponent you're playing. And so I'm excited to see them hold San Diego State down and then ultimately provide enough on the offensive side to get a W. You know, 2-point dogs going into Thursday, but I think they certainly get a win on Thursday night in Dallas. I want to say, I really think 52-56 seems like a realistic, like,
yeah, I agree.
I think that gets it done.
Yeah, I think I'm going to call right here. First team to 55 wins, and I'm counting on it being the Jays. So
I love it.
You got anything else? Are we good to go?
I think we're good, but.
All right, for my guy Tay-Tay here.
Oh, come on.
Okay, for my guy Taylor Stormberg, we'll go T-Storm for now.
T-Storm.
Yeah, we'll go T-Storm.
All right, Coach Lou, whatever you say.
We got Robbie Lula, Taylor Stormberg, T-Storm, and Coach Lou. Maybe we'll change the podcast name to that. T-Storm and Coach Lou. Make sure you check everything out on jays247.com. And I'm sure we will be back soon with some reactions to the NCAA tournament.